Hi, welcome to the first ICA podcast. My name is Warren Eagles, recorded in Australia. We're starting a series of chats or mini interviews with colourists around the world, basically asking them how they got started in the industry. Did they get any training? Did they use books? Were there DVDs in them? Colourists for lots of different levels, some from the old school using telecine, some from the newer non-linear type colour graders. We'll also be talking about what they're doing now. Are they more into DI, music videos, commercials, and what kit are they using? So here's the first interview. This is Ken Robinson.
You're listening to an ICA podcast.
This morning I'm talking to Ken Robinson all the way from Argentina, and I'm in Beijing, so the line might be a bit strange at times. Welcome, Ken. How are you?
Good, thanks very much. It's actually night here, 9:30 at night.
Oh, good. So I'm probably keeping you from a glass of wine then.
Yeah, definitely.
So I'm very interested in how you started colour correction, where it was in the world, and just how you got involved to begin with.
Well, I started off actually wanting to be a photographer. That was where my aim was. And I used to do all my own developing of film and printing and stuff like that at school. And then my cousin, who said to me, "Why do you want to be a photographer?" And I said, "Well," and he said, "Well, are you sure?" And I said, "Well, I don't know." And anyway, he had a small post-production company at that time, and also a place where he rented out VHS machines and U-matics and things. In fact, I remember the first VHS machine that came in. We were all staring at it, you know, in wonder. And we used to go out and deliver machines and do setups and do tests for commercials and things like that. And then I grew up a little bit more. I was 17, 18 in those days, and then when I became 19 or 20, I managed to find another company which allowed me to join them, and I found a telecine there. And I remember the first time I saw the telecine. It was a Mark III, and it had three joysticks, and my big question was, how do you operate three joysticks when you've only got two hands?
Good question, yeah.
Well, anyway, after a while of not really understanding that, I saw other people operating it and began to realize it wasn't quite as difficult as it looked, and was given the chance to operate it. I had no idea what I was doing. I could lace the film, but there were so many knobs and things on this Mark III. I mean, these machines were great, weren't they? A Mark III flying spot jump scan. I mean, fantastic. You couldn't go wrong, really, could
what
you?
What was that company called, Ken?
My cousin's company was called Research Recordings. And the thing that clients used to say was, "Nice name, but would you mind doing the research on someone else's time?" And the other company was called Color Video Services, which their main operation was, in fact, doing kine, basically recording back to film, but on a very old system. And they had quad 2-inch machines, which I basically learned to run. And this was before 1-inch machines, you know. I mean, am I that old? Anyway, you know, being a whippersnapper of about 19 or 20, it was always very interesting to open up the panels and see what was inside. And then, you know, you stuck a screwdriver in to see what this thing did, and it smoke came out. So you'd call the engineer and say, "It wasn't me. Wasn't me." And anyway, so that's how I started on telecine, as
did,
it were.
Did someone actually sit down with you and train you on it, or was there manuals that you followed and picked up stuff yourself? How did it work then?
I watched, literally. The manuals were, you know, basically much more of how to repair the machine and how to, in theory, keep it maintained from Sintel, ranks Intel in those days. And no, there was no training. I did have access while I was at Color Video Services. I had access to a friend who was working for my cousin at Research Recordings, who helped me over the phone. So I'd ring him up and say, "Look, you know, it's just not looking very good." He said, "Well, all right. Well, what's the problem? Okay, we'll go into this panel here and go down there and tweak that and do this." And you know, I ended up doing the shading and flicker over the phone. Neg gains. Do you remember the neg gains from those machines? Right, okay. With a screwdriver.
It's probably true to say the job was a lot more technical then than it is now, isn't it?
Well, I think so, yes, because the quality of the pictures were, you know, you had to drive the machine to get the quality out the other end.
Yes.
But then, you know, after a while, you know, I moved on and I actually moved back to Research Recordings and started doing proper color correction, you know, long jobs, mainly rock videos in those days, the first ones for MTV. And they would come in with reels and reels of film. We had no computer memory system at all. It was all, you know, you put the film up, press the button, and let it run and color grade it as it went. So it was quite exciting at camera claps. You had to get the thing done instantly.
Yeah, that's also...
You remember that?
Yeah, people might know that as grading on the fly, which we called it.
That was definitely... Definitely grading on the fly, it was. And there was one nice story. A producer had this idea that if you stopped the telecine, you know, to actually do a pickup or to recolor correct something, that you'd scratch the film. So there was this huge fight during sessions of not stopping the machine. And it wasn't anything to do with the price or how fast we were doing it. It was the fact she thought that, you know, we were scratching.
So this would have been around mid-80s, would it?
It would be 81, 82, something around those. Yes,
so that
yeah,
would
about 81.
Be print on the machine or negative on the machine at that time?
No, well, Color Video Services machine was never up to scratch, never up to scratch, to do negative. We were mostly doing prints, and when negative came in, the machine was, you know, really not in a good state. And I learned very fast exactly how you have to have a Mark III set up to do negative. It's a whole different animal because everything has to be aligned properly. And if it isn't, it just simply looks terrible. So, there was a quick learning curve when I went to Research Recordings to do negative for basically promos, you know, rock videos for MTV.
Just give us a rundown of things you've been doing recently, or say in the last 10 years or whatever.
Well, I migrated from when I left the UK because, you know, as one does, I got an itch to travel. I think there was a girl down in Australia that I was chasing or something. And, you know, basically one moved from just simply joystick controls to a basic computer memory system through to... You know, the precursors to the DaVinci, you know, and then the Pogel and things got more sophisticated as time went on. And really at that point it didn't really matter what you were doing, you know, whether it was a long movie or whether it was a commercial, you know, the technique stayed pretty much the same. And, you know, you learned pretty well whether you were going to be doing Super 8 reversal, which I used to do for Channel 4. It looked superb in those days, I can tell you. To negative 35 or 16 or whatever came through, because, you know, fundamentally nothing really was any different. You know, maybe the way the controls worked or something was slightly different, but nothing really too much. And then, you know... we saw the advent of the Spirit telecine come and the fact that, you know, you could put a piece of negative back up again after 3 months, 6 months, and the pictures came out the same, which was never possible in the early days. Once you'd done your first transfer, you were lucky to get it. You're looking the same the second time round, really. And then, you know, especially with the ursas and things like that, which would never really line up properly. And then really, I think for all of us, and must be the same for you too, you know, when we went from, when we went to non-linear, that's really where everything started to make a lot more sense. And really, that's where I try and keep myself. You know, I know you're going to ask me what my preference is for equipment, and I'm going to tell you anything non-linear.
Yeah.
I really couldn't care what it was or what it is, because if it's non-linear and in a computer and you can get at it without damaging it and you can do it again and again, honestly, it really doesn't make much difference what type of equipment you're using.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think once you've learned, say, the art of grading and you've got experience in different situations, actually getting your head around the different softwares is not so hard. You know grading, you just need a few days on the box, go through, and then you're away, I think.
Well, exactly. It's like driving a different car or, from a car to a truck or something. I mean, the only thing is it's just slightly handles differently, really. You know, the things do differently. But you know what you want to do with a picture. It's just a question of knowing where to find that knob or button or switch to actually make it happen. That's the big thing, really.
What have you been working on recently? Right, we'll come right up to date now, 2009.
Well, basically, I've been running Luster and doing non-linear movies more than anything else. In Buenos Aires, we've got a system with Final Cut, which again is, you know, it's very, very cheap, but basically does the job. And, you know, as we well know, the market's been quite down at the moment, so there hasn't been a huge amount going on this year. But certainly the year before, you know, there was still quite a lot of telecine going on, quite a lot of direct transfer. And really, you know, every time I go back to telecine, I really yearn to go back to non-linear.
Yes.
And I think, you know, I know what I wanted to add really to this is the thing about non-linear. I think the first DI in India with a movie called The Rock, which was translated into Hindi, and it was 2 hours 20 minutes long with 7,000 cuts or something completely loony, 6 songs, and I don't know what. And it was all, we did it linear off the telecine. It was an absolute nightmare. Because you'd have a shot which was just a fight sequence shot all day, so the sun in the morning was a completely different angle for the night, and you know, they didn't really care about that when they cut it. So it's our job as colorists to try and smooth it out. You can never make a black wall white or a white wall black. It's just, you know, unless you're going to do a frame by frame job, it's impossible. So, you know, your job really is to smooth the thing out so no one really notices. And that's the challenge. And, of course, with a non-linear system, it's just so easy because you just keep on going, run it through and through and through and through again until you see there's no jumps. And that's really what it's about. Whereas, you know, if you do things linearly, it's, you know, you've got to put one roll of negative up and then take that down and put the next one up. By the time, I mean, even if you put a still in the still store, it's moving. A still store is really useless, in my opinion. Yes. You need something moving.
Yeah, it's true. I find exactly the same with commercials. Everybody's all over in the first hour of the session, all looking for that look that we're going to achieve for the ad. And you really need to look at more than one or two shots. But, you know, lacing up different roles and spinning to finding camera shots is quite time-consuming, obviously. And you're running your negative around all the time. So non-linear for commercials in that respect is great. So that makes it a lot easier.
Oh, wow. But not only that, the time it takes to do a 30-second commercial to the, you know, to really, really polish it and everything else is nothing, you know, in comparison if you're trying to do it like that linearly off the Panasonic. I mean, you know, the times I've done commercials on Pablo or whatever, it was like a dream come true.
Okay, Ken, that's really great. Where can people get hold of you if they want to drop you an email or anything?
Well, sure. I have two email addresses. One is ken, at flightfour.org, or the other one, which is flightfour@gmail.com.
Excellent. Okay. Well, thanks for your time.
Good luck, everybody.
I'll let you get back to your glass of red.
Okay, man. Thanks.
Cheers, Ken.
Cheers, man.
Bye.
All right. Thanks.